This is Dr. Chad Edwards, and you are listening to podcast number 5 of Against the Grain.
Welcome to Against the Grain podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards, where he challenges the status quo when it comes to medicine. We get into hot topics in the medical field with real stories from real patients to help you on your way to a healthy lifestyle. Get ready, because we're about to go against the grain.
This is Brian Wilkes here with Dr. Chad Edwards. Chad, how you doing today?
Man, I am excited to be in flu season and talk about some awesome topics.
Flu season. So by default, half your listeners aren't listening, right? They have the flu.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, maybe because they're home from work, they have nothing better to do than listen to me ramble on about a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, there's that. Our topic of our podcast today is I have the flu. Now I need, do I say Tamiflu, like the woman's name?
You can.
Tamiflu.
I think most people would say Tamiflu.
Tamiflu.
But, or.
Kind of reads Tammy.
To be flu? Brand non-specific. Oseltamivir.
it does read Tamiflu. Hmm. Interesting. Okay. So there's that. So we have some sponsors that keep the lights on around here. Revolution Health and Wellness Clinic. Chad Edwards, Dr. Chad Edwards Clinic. Tell us a little bit about your clinic, Chad.
Functional Medicine Clinic, Tulsa's premier functional medicine clinic. We look for the underlying cause of illness and disease, and we will use any tool that has the potential to help someone and not harm them to get them better. Lots of IV nutrition, bioidentical hormones, comprehensive lab testing, looking at the overall health picture, doing whatever we can. We also do prolotherapy, stem cell, PRP or platelet-rich plasma therapy for sports injury, athletes, musculoskeletal pain. Great stuff. Give us a call at 918-935-3636 or visit our website at revolutionhealth.org. Come in and see us.
You never say this when I ask you about your clinic, but one of the things I like best about it is that there's not a long waiting game.
Excuse me. Not a long waiting game to get an appointment, not a long waiting game.
Both. Just so, really great service.
You know, I will say that sometimes we're running a little bit behind, but it's because we're focused on each patient individually, you know, one at a time. So I wouldn't, you know, make a 9 o'clock appointment thinking you're going to get in right at 9, because sometimes that doesn't happen.
Right.
But we are going to take care of you in the best way that we can. But we've got an amazing staff. I feel so blessed to have the people that we have.
Boy, I get in right away every time. Really, seriously. You probably feel bad because you don't pay me to do this podcast. You're like, get Brian right in, right?
Exactly.
There you go. So our next sponsor is the Upper Cervical Health Centers. Upper Cervical is not your typical chiropractic office. They're different in that they never jerk, twist, snap, or crack your spine. They actually do an overall holistic evaluation of your health. And it's interesting to note, their patients report an improvement of over 75% in their own health. Their number is 918-742-2300, or you can go to their website at uppercervicaltulsa.com/newyou. Tamiflu, Chad, let's talk about it. What is it?
Let's talk about Tamiflu. I used to do a lot of emergency medicine. I used to work in urgent cares and things like that, and I would get patients that would come in, and both, you know, at the time I was much more traditional in my approach to medicine, and then I've got, you know, the patients on the other side, and they've got the flu.
Pretty focused young doctor.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing it by the book.
I've got to help these people. I've got to give them their pill.
Right.
So you get somebody that has the flu, and, you know, what are you going to do? Well, you give them the anti-flu drug, and there's some older ones, amantadine, and there's some older antiviral medications. The topic that, you know, the Tamiflu is what we're going to focus on. Relenza is another antiviral that's been shown to have some effect. But most of the marketing stuff has been on Tamiflu.
Tamiflu, for the people that don't know, and I imagine most do, but they've heard it on the news. It is a controversial subject. But it's if I get the flu, if I have the flu, Chad, I take Tamiflu and it reduces the symptoms. Is the claim?
Yeah, so that's an interesting point. So let's talk about a couple of things. So the first one is, yes, the thought is that Tamiflu is going to make you better. What's actually been shown in the studies, Tamiflu was developed by Roche, R-O-C-H-E. That's the drug manufacturer that developed it, and they did some studies. And there's some controversy around that, and we'll talk about that, after we get through some of this stuff. because that's going to be part of the against the grain stuff that we'll discuss. But according to their package insert, it's, you know, the safety information, who should get it, the prescribing information, how do you prescribe it, warnings, indications, contraindications, all those things. According to their package insert, excuse me, I've got this cough.
Get him a Tamiflu right now. Marshall, can we get a Tamiflu in here?
So according to their study, they break up their results based on the studies that were done into age groups. And they've got 2 weeks to 1 year. There are two studies that were performed. They've got 1 to 12 years old, and they've got 13 years and up, and then they've got geriatric patients. I believe those were over the age of 65, I believe, but I don't remember that. According to the package insert, 2 weeks to 1 year, again, like I said, there's two studies, and the quote in that, and remember, Tamiflu, let me start with the beginning. So Tamiflu, according to their statement, is indicated for the treatment of acute uncomplicated illness due to influenza infection in patients 2 weeks of age or older who have been symptomatic for no more than 2 days. So when we look at 2 weeks to 1 year, because remember, it's indicated for 2 weeks of age and older. So in the two studies that they performed, these clinical trials were not designed to evaluate clinical efficacy or a virologic response. In other words, we don't know that it works on 2 weeks to a year. We have no studies proving that it works. And that
here
was directly
we, here we
from,
go again.
Exactly. That was directly from theirs. But these were safety studies. Is it safe to give it to these kids? And they concluded that it was safe. There's no studies on patients less than two weeks of old.
It doesn't necessarily prove effective in treating the symptoms, but it's safe.
We'll get into that too.
Okay.
Stay tuned. The second group, 1 to 12 years of age, in the studies that were performed, they got better 1.5 days faster. So if you consider something like the flu, you know, say 7 to 10 days, mm-hmm. so you'll get better at 8.5 days instead of 10.
So sounds like a miracle drug.
Mm-hmm. 13 years and up, they got better 1.3 days faster. And geriatric patients, they got better 1 day faster. So we're talking about somebody that's diagnosed with the flu that has had symptoms less than 2 days, can get a medication, and it makes them better 1.3 days faster, according to the package insert.
Which, for those of us that in those age categories that have children at those age, it just means that they postpone their next sickness for 1.3 days.
In that group, it's 1.5 days.
1.5 days.
So,
Your kid's going to get sick again, though, with a different strand of something in literally 3 days.
yeah, pretty much. But again, I think it's important to understand that this is the data that was released by Roche.
Right.
And again, there's a lot of controversy about this, and we're going to go over that more specifically.
Roche, again, is the manufacturer of Tamiflu, correct?
That's correct.
How much do you know about Roche? Is it Roche?
I think it's Roche.
Roche. Do we know anything, Marshall, about Roche?
I don't know anything about Roche, but I can look it up.
Yeah, let's continue.
Sounds good. Yeah. I didn't research that.
No. I want to know more about this company.
I really do.
Are they a publicly traded company? What other treatments do they have? Who they are? So we'll get back to that. Marshall's going to look it up.
Awesome. Cool. Okay. So then, further things about Tamiflu. Who should take it? According to the CDC, only certain groups, and so those sick enough to be hospitalized with the flu. And again, we're looking at this because there's potential for some harm. There's potential.
Right.
And so we talked about it, but it's safe. Well, the CDC says only certain groups should take it.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
What the heck is Tamiflu? Is it a pill?
Yeah. Well, it can be a liquid. It comes as a liquid. It comes as either I can't remember if it's a capsule or a tablet. I don't remember on that one.
Okay.
But... So the dose for adults, 75 mm-hmm. milligrams, you take one twice a day for 5 days. That's the standard treatment dose.
And you're supposed to take it early in on the...
The earlier the better, okay. At least according to those studies. Okay. Now, this stuff is relatively expensive. Some insurances will cover it, many won't. You're looking at about $125 for a one dose pack, 5 days, twice a day.
Gotcha.
So that's about what you're looking at. And that... I think that $120, $125 CVS, you know, those kinds of places, that's about what you're looking at.
Okay, gotcha.
Plus or minus a little bit. So Tamiflu, it's this medication. It's what's called a neuraminidase inhibitor. When you talk about the flu, you know, we've all heard about H1N1. So the H's and the N's actually refer to proteins that are on the lipid envelope of this virus, the flu virus. And you have the hemagglutinins, and then you have the neuraminidase. Anything that ends in ACE, medically speaking, is an enzyme. And an enzyme catalyzes a reaction. It makes a reaction go from point A to point B. That reaction may or may not occur without the enzyme, but the enzyme makes it go much faster, and it, you know, makes it go that way. So neuraminidase is basically an enzyme that works on sialic acid, and it helps with what's called the virulence factors of flu. And you have different ones, different neuraminidases. So the H1N1 is type 1 of the hemagglutinin and type 1 of the neuraminidase. And, you know, you might have, you know, H5N3, which is a different virus structure, or at least the capsule, those proteins on the outside, which make it more severe, less severe. That's why with swine flu, the H1N1, you know, there was such, oh my gosh, this really bad, you know, H1N1's bad, because of those virulence type factors. Apologize, I have to keep clearing my throat. So Tamiflu is a neuraminidase inhibitor. It prevents that protein, that enzyme, from doing its thing. And one of the functions of neuraminidase is enabling that virus to spread, you know, release itself from the infected cell, and to be able to migrate through the respiratory epithelium. That's the cells that line your, you know, your nose and lungs and all those things. So that neuraminidase helps that virus propagate, go to the next cell, come out as virus particles that we can cough out and spread. So Tamiflu is a neuraminidase inhibitor, so it prevents, in concept, it prevents that process. And if you can prevent it from releasing from the infected cell, it can't spread, either in the host, you know, the sick person, or going to somebody else. So that's kind of the idea and the concept.
So it doesn't kill it, per se.
That's correct.
It represses it.
That's correct.
For spread.
Yep. It contains it.
Okay.
It's a containment strategy.
So that's important. You know, you may get better a day and a half faster, but it doesn't necessarily reduce your symptoms immediately. Right?
That's exactly right.
Right.
That's exactly right. And again, anytime we're going to use that day and a half faster, this is based on Roche's original reported data.
Gotcha.
We're going to come back to that. Okay. So we talked about, so who should take this stuff, this neuraminidase inhibitor called Tamiflu? Those sick enough to be in the hospital, if you have severe, complicated, progressive health problems such as COPD, asthma, diabetes, heart disease, a suppressed immune system, those kinds of things. Anyone less than the age of 2, pregnant women. Now, this is interesting to me because it's a pregnancy category C.
Pregnant women can't take anything, can they? They can't drink. They can't smoke. They can't take aspirin. Can they take aspirin?
Right. No.
There's that.
Exactly. So pregnancy category C means there's no human trials.
Right.
You know, showing outcomes. There are some animal trials on Tamiflu, but there's none for humans. That's why it's a category C.
Okay. Hold on a second. That's important. So okay. Category C
basically means there's no evidence that of harm. So with pregnancy categories, there's A, B, C, D, and X.
Okay.
X is like, if you remember thalidomide, you know, right, back in the, 60s, 70s, somewhere in the 60s. Nausea drug for, you know, that morning sickness stuff.
Right.
Caused major birth defects.
So it's like eating poison.
Exactly.
Right.
Statins, you know, like Lipitor and Crestor and all those things, those are category X drugs.
Hmm.
So you do not take those when you're pregnant. Category D is there's evidence of human harm. Mm-hmm. And you got to seriously weigh, are the risks outweighed by the potential benefits?
Mm-hmm.
This one is category C. There's really no evidence either way. Category B is shown to have some safety. And category A is like free for all. You can take it.
So,
and that's like oxygen.
So in this category C for Tamiflu, because I think this is important for people, right? Is it, when they say it's unknown, is it that means it because there's not enough research? It could meet a consortium of different things, correct?
Well, but nobody's going to do studies on pregnant women to see, is this really safe?
Right.
So there's a lot of drugs out there that are category C.
Okay.
There's a lot.
Okay.
And I just think it's interesting that we are recommending that pregnant women take Tamiflu if they get the flu when we don't really know.
Yeah, it's important.
There are some observational studies showing, you know, women on Tamiflu, you know, didn't have any apparent negative effect.
Right.
So,
but it's an unknown factor, and doctors do recommend for pregnant women when they get the flu to take Tamiflu, correct?
In some cases, yes. In some cases. And okay. You got to look at risks, benefits, all those kinds of things. And you got all kinds of doctors out there. Some doctors don't know enough and will say, oh, yeah, here's your Tamiflu. Some doctors are very well versed and would say, oh, you know, I really wouldn't recommend it in this case.
Right.
It's a really an individual case by case kind of thing.
Okay.
Those patients that are less than 19 years old on long-term aspirin therapy, American Indians or Alaskan Natives, morbidly obese, nursing home, and long-term care facility residents. Those are the categories, according to the CDC, who should be taking Tamiflu if it's indicated. Then, you know, we talked about the safety thing. And again, I'm sticking to the package insert that comes with Tamiflu. So the major things that we've seen are skin reactions and hypersensitivity. So we've seen some anaphylaxis, so major hypersensitivity, allergic reactions, got to go to the hospital, airway breathing problems. You could die if you don't get treatment. Then you have what's called toxic epidermal necrolysis and Stevens-Johnson. Again, potentially fatal skin hypersensitivity reactions. So those are possibilities. That only happens in like hypersensitivity kinds of cases. Interestingly, there are neuropsychiatric manifestations, again, just straight from the package insert. And these are mainly in kids, but we've seen hallucinations, delirium, and abnormal behavior. And now that sounds like, well, my kid was acting up yesterday and he had abnormal behavior. And yeah, that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about some serious cases. And in some of these cases, the abnormal behavior was so severe, it resulted in fatal outcomes. In other words, apparent suicides. In fact, if my memory serves me correctly, Tamiflu was banned in Japan because of a few of these cases. Now, this isn't, you know, we're talking about 1%. We're not talking half the people that take it get this. Small percentages. But when it's that severe, you got to look at the risks and benefits. So when you say it's safe, I would argue maybe that's not 100% the case.
Well, I think to your point, if we're talking about a cure for cancer, obviously there's a risk reward situation there, a life or death situation. But when we're putting in what you said in context with a day and a half, you know, a day and a half normally or somewhere around that, is it worth even the 1% chance? A day and a half, I'm feeling better versus even at a 1% risk, I could get some serious mental disorder. Right? It's not worth it.
Absolutely. So
in my opinion,
I'm going to be very cautious about saying do not do this or absolutely do this. Cause I cannot, unless we have a doctor patient relationship, one-on-one face-to-face individual relationship, do not misconstrue anything that I say as that medical advice.
Because it could be the case that you have, I know my youngest son, Cash, at 1 year old, came down with the rotavirus.
Yeah.
Which is pretty serious for little guys.
Right.
Right. So we were in the hospital with IVs.
Yep.
If I could have bought a day and a half of him not being sick and throwing up, among other things, right? That might have been worth it because there can be life and death situations when it comes to those things. But generally speaking,
you know, in my perspective, and certainly not with every patient, but what I've seen is, when I was urgent care, ER, you know, those acute care setting kind of situations, when patients would have I would diagnose them with the flu and they'd be like, oh, okay, give me that Tamiflu. Well, I mean, you know, you've got a mild fever. I mean, you feel bad. I get it. You know, you feel bad. But this is not a panacea for the flu. It's not. Yeah. And the CDC doesn't even recommend it in those cases.
Well, Marshall, do you have the any information on Roche? Because I want to do a little blurb here, if I will, on the business side of things, Chad, here.
Okay, so Roche is known as F. Hoffman and La Roche AG. It's a Swiss global healthcare company, operates worldwide under two divisions, pharmaceuticals and then diagnostics, okay? And so In 2014, they did $48 billion worldwide, and they're the third largest pharma company worldwide.
And they're based in Switzerland.
Based in Switzerland.
Interesting. It's a whole different dynamic, folks, of how things operate and how things are regulated with the Swiss. I think we all have a general understanding of that. I'll say this. Having worked, you know, my background is, you know, politics, but also packaging. I say the two P's, right? Packaging and politics. And then the third one is PR, right? They all go together. But one of the things I learned in packaging with some high-end pharmaceutical companies is there was a decision made a couple decades ago that that people were sick of, drug companies were sick of trying to prove to doctors that their drug worked, right? They were sick of it.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah. And so...
I don't want to market to you anymore.
Yeah, we're done with you doctors who want to know science and stuff like that. Like, you know, trust me, a $1 billion company does not start with the public health factor. That's not where they start. They start with profit, and they have to. Hopefully the consumer is educated enough to either send them back a profit or not based on their results, right? That's kind of how it works.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the problem, though, with that theory is a couple decades ago, they were going through doctors or otherwise known as scientists like yourself, Chad, right? Ha, ha, ha. Now they have bypassed with the mediums that are available the scientist and gone direct to the consumer. It's a big push. And the reason they do that is, one, they can educate the consumer who they generally think is not as smart as the doctor, which they would be right because people don't make buying decisions on facts. They make buying decisions on feelings, right? I think we all know that. The second factor to that is it much cheaper. Your distribution channel is much, much cheaper if you can align it correctly. So we have the internet that's evolved. We have television, which has gotten broader in scope, and it's easier to get to the consumer. And what they did was, as you see these commercials where me as the average person, I have no idea if Viagra is good for me. I have no idea if Tamiflu is good for me, but I see the commercials. I see the information on the internet, on WebMD, if you will. And I say, to your point about you working in a clinic, people are now coming, and the effect has been very positive for these drug companies, for these billion-dollar Swiss-owned drug companies, because now you have people making buying decisions, Chad, on what drug they're going to use before they even come into your office. They say, I want Tamiflu.
Exactly.
What the heck do they know about Tamiflu?
Exactly. And that's and that's much to my point. Now, what we've done so far is stuck to what Roche wanted you to hear.
Right.
What Roche wanted you to know. And that's that you get better 1.3 to 1 to 1.5 days faster.
And they didn't hear that via a scientist. They heard that via a commercial, a PR campaign or whatever the case is, direct to the consumer.
And, you know, I actually saw this commercial last night.
Yeah,
which I hadn't paid attention to it until my office staff was telling me about it, that, you know, they said there is no small flu. And so you've got these gigantic characters, you know, big kid, big adult, walking around, everything else is small, talking about how big the flu is.
Right.
And Tamiflu fixes all of that. And in the commercial, this was yesterday, in the commercial, it said you get better 1.5 days faster. I'm paraphrasing, but it was 1.5 days. I remember that specifically. Because I had just, you know, done all the research for this podcast and talking about where does this data come from. So that's what the manufacturer of Tamiflu want you to know.
Yeah, and try suing a Swiss-owned billion-dollar company.
Right.
Because of misinformation. Try that. See how that works for you.
So here's the interesting thing. And this is from, you know, we've talked about the British Medical Journal before. And so this is a very prestigious major medical journal. And I want to read this. And that you can go to bmj.com/Tamiflu.
Right.
And that's the British Medical Journal. And this is where I'm getting this data. So they have what's called the Open Campaign, which aims to achieve appropriate, necessary, independent scrutiny of data from clinical trials. Working with others, we seek to highlight the problems caused by lack of access to data, and we welcome any suggestion on how to take things further. Then they say the Tamiflu story. Our first open data campaign initiative relates to a public promise Roche made in 2009 Now, this drug was released in 1999, so we're talking about a 10-year difference. In 2009, to release full clinical trial reports in response to an investigation by the British Medical Journal and Cochrane collaborators Peter Doshi and Tom Jefferson. Now, if you look at the Cochrane database, Tom Jefferson is on virtually every one of those as a Cochrane collaborator, reviewing all of the data. I mean, he is in the middle of the flu stuff, period. Right. So he was looking, they were looking through all of this, and they said, there's some problems here, and we need some, we need the data.
In other words, there's some science problems here, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
We don't have all the data.
Certainly,
we don't have all the
certainly
information.
Certainly not profit problems.
Exactly.
I got 99 problems in profit A1.
Exactly. And so under that pressure, Roche in 2009 made a promise to release their full data.
Sure. Yeah.
So here is their, here's their bottom line. The World Health Organization recommends Tamiflu, but has not vetted the Tamiflu data. And this is from the British Medical Journal, prestigious journal. This is not my opinion.
The British Medical Journal is a pretty important, I mean, it's a
major peer-reviewed medical journal.
Right.
Yes. The EMA, which is European Medicines Agency, I believe, approved Tamiflu, but did not review the full Tamiflu data sheet. The CDC and the European EDC encouraged the use and stockpiling of Tamiflu, but did not vet the Tamiflu data. The majority of Roche's phase two treatment trials remain unpublished over a decade after completion.
Wow.
So they completed the studies. 10 years later, hadn't published it.
Wow.
And they made their recommendations, or these 1 to 1.5 days faster,
right,
based on their incomplete data. So did they just pick the ones that worked and used that?
Right.
We'll get into that. In December 2009, Roche publicly promised independent scientists access to full study reports for selected Tamiflu trials. But to date, and that was as of 2009, the to date part, the company has not made even one full report available. Releasing the trial reports would allow independent academics to answer questions about this globally stockpiled Tamiflu drug. And Roche has been very reluctant. By October 2013, the Cochrane reviewers had received the full clinical study reports for 107 studies from the European Medicines Agency, GlaxoSmithKline, who developed Relenza, and Roche. And then the Cochrane review actually did an update in 2014. And both the Cochrane Library and the shortened version as two separate reviews, one per compound, in the British Medical Journal. So what did the Cochrane review conclude? Well, they said that, you know, for adults, they reviewed all the data, and they found that adults actually, instead of 1.3 days, they got better 16 hours faster. 16 hours.
Yeah.
So,
which seems like an eternity when you have the flu.
It can. Sure.
But
it can.
It's certainly not,
but
not
we're talking,
an eternity.
We're talking a drug that costs $125 for a 5-day pack that has the potential to cause severe psychiatric problems in some patients.
Right.
That gets you better 16 hours faster.
Right.
Is it worth it?
Yeah.
I can't answer that question, but that it raises some serious questions.
I think there's a third category though, Chad. You've kind of articulated it. It's categorized in a class of drugs that we don't potentially know all the long-term side effects, right?
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
You know, again, released in 1999.
Right.
We don't look at long-term stuff.
Right.
so here's some other interesting...
Don't you just find it interesting, though? Don't you just find it interesting that the company that makes this is headquartered in Switzerland? So it's you've seen it before. There's these drug companies that emerge overseas in protected areas that really have no incentive to long-term care about the effect of a drug on your body. They have zero incentive.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, why would they make an investment to find that out?
Right.
B, to wait for it when there's billion-dollar profits now that are virtually protected from all legislative action. Right?
Right.
Which amazes me that the FDA would approve such a vendor on a massive scale based in Switzerland.
But again, you know, we're talking about, you know, we're going to talk more about the flu,
right,
the history of flu shot, all that stuff
on our next episode,
in our next podcast.
Yeah.
But there's such fear related to flu. And my opinion, what I've seen, I don't think the average person fears flu because it will kill them. I think they fear flu because it makes them feel really stinking bad. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
That's what I've experienced. Now, in some cases, it can be life-threatening. And, I mean, there's just it sucks. You know, the flu sucks.
I think Tamiflu's done a great job. And Marshall is our brilliant single, by the way, young man that operates the show. Marshall, when you think of Tamiflu, prior to this podcast, I wasn't thinking, I don't know about you, but I wasn't really thinking that it was just a day and a half. For some reason, I was thinking I'd go get Tamiflu, and I'm out with the flu.
I thought it treated the symptoms.
Yeah, like immediately.
Right.
Right, like you're sick now, and in like 10 hours, you're going to be all
right. Right, you take it, and it immediately starts fixing whatever's, you know, wrong, getting rid of the virus.
We got that somewhere, right? I mean, mm-hmm. based on zero fact, right?
Zero fact.
But we got it somewhere.
From our friends.
YouTube. Facebook, something, yeah. That's interesting, Chad. What do you think of that? What do you think of that perception? Is that pretty mainstream when someone comes into your clinic?
Oh, I think so. I think that, yeah, give me that stuff so I feel better.
Right.
You know,
immediately.
Well, that's, you know, you take a decongestant and it works kind of right away. It's not the case.
What do you think in Tamiflu opens up some bigger questions is how people view their own healthcare. I think it's, you know, we live in a fairly fast-paced environment, right? Do you see a lot of people that come into the clinic and they're just all about immediate fixes? Is that kind of the generation that we live in that you see?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I mean, who doesn't want to feel better yesterday?
But generally, what are the ramifications that people don't generally ask that, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Why is that, do you think? What's your opinion?
I mean, I think it's right now,
yeah,
society, we are, I mean, you can, you know, older patients,
right.
will, if I'm going to categorize older patients, you know, and I'd say, you know, 60, 70s, 80s year old patients tend to be very compliant. The medicine in their era was very paternalistic, meaning I'm the doctor, here's your pill, you take this mm-hmm. pill, don't ask me questions.
Mm.
And
process. And,
right.
Yeah,
and so they will go home and take their pill.
Right.
Even if that pill makes them, every time they stand up, they pass out. They're not going to question. They're just, their doctor is going to do it.
They came from a generation where, you know, the doctor, the idea of a doctor was very, it was respected and trusted, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And they did what he said, no matter what.
Right.
He or she said, yeah.
And, you know, what we progress to today and our younger patients. Now, they also, you know, we've had some weather the last couple of days, and you know, here and roads were kind of crummy yesterday, and older patients will leave a day early
to get to the doctor.
And I've seen it.
Right.
I had patients that would have an 8 o'clock appointment and they would leave 6 hours early,
right,
to get there to me. They didn't want to miss that appointment. Now, you get a 25-year-old and they'll be like, dude, I'm not coming. They'll just, and they may not even call
it
cancel.
Marshall's like 25 or something like that. It's his generation. He screwed it all up. Although I will say this guy's a little different, but.
But I mean, some of them, they won't even cancel. They'll be like, oh, I forgot about it. I'm busy.
Not even a courtesy call, nothing. Yeah.
Doesn't make them a bad person. It's just it's a different paradigm.
Right.
And so I think, you know, today we're faster paced. We want it better now. We're burning the candle at both ends. We don't have time to be sick. Give me that Tamiflu so I can go. And
Tamiflu is one of these areas where, you know, this Roche company has hit a generation of people that aren't really concerned with a lot of facts. They're concerned with a possible quick treatment of their flu symptoms.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, yeah. I mean, Tamiflu wasn't developed for that. It was developed for severe complications, keep people out of that. Well, I say this, I don't know that,
right,
but this is what the CDC recommends it for, is this category. Now, we're being marketed, just like that commercial we talked about, we're being marketed very differently.
Being
marketed, you got the flu, you got to go get your Tamiflu.
Yeah, of course.
And there's have you ever heard of Edward Land?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I hadn't either. He was a scientist. And
I like how you're trying to, you know, I appreciate you throwing that in there.
I'm
you
here
hadn't
for
either.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. scientist and inventor of the Polaroid instant camera.
Yeah, of course. I've heard. Yeah,
yeah, of course. Yeah, who hadn't heard of that guy?
Yeah.
So his quote.
Those are coming back, by the way.
Marketing is what you do when your product is no good.
Which is 99% of products, right?
Exactly.
So here the catch is with with these commercials is if you think about it, it's true, right? Even if you have a good product, think about a commercial that would exist for people listening to this podcast where, hey, I have the flu and it's really, really bad and it's coming out of both ends and I'm not going to take Tamiflu because it might give me some serious psychiatric side effects. So I'm going to stick it out, a lot of pain for the next day and a half, and I want you to buy nothing. That's just what you do. People would be like, why is this commercial on here, right?
That's right. That's
just
right.
Stick it out, that, big guy, tough
that,
it up.
That doesn't sell. Big gulp straws don't sell.
No, it's amazing to me that it does not sell, you know. That kind of I mean, think about a Nike commercial where they just show the shoe being made, basically in a waffle maker, you know, they pour the rubber in there, you know, the original Nike shoes, yeah, like at a sweatshop or overseas. It certainly doesn't have any effect that would want to make you buy the product. That's for sure, right?
That's right.
So it's no different with drugs. And I think it's the one area where people have to be a little smarter than the marketing guys, right? I mean, surely you go buy a shoe and you might waste a little money, but you're cool with your friends. You know, Marshall was a basketball player, so I'm sure you wasted a lot of money on sneakers that didn't make you jump any higher, right, Marshall?
That was the only thing that got me off the ground.
This is the shoes.
The shoes.
and the only thing that made you dunk a basketball despite being 6'7"?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, it's totally the shoes. No height, no physical attributes at all, right? So in the same respect, you have these strategies that are very effective that are used in drugs. The problem with that is this is much different than a shoe, because you get the wrong shoe, not a big deal.
Right.
Right? You get a blister, no big deal. You get the wrong drug and you can have that quote-unquote says, hey, we'll save you a day and a half of the flu, but then you have long-term psychiatric problems, or maybe short-term because of suicide, you know?
That's right.
That's pretty sad to think about.
You know, in a 1998 study, it was shown that the number four cause of death in America was properly prescribed medications.
Wow.
Not drug interactions, not overdoses, not allergic reactions.
Wow.
These were properly prescribed medications.
I bet it's higher than that, Chad.
And it very well could be.
Yeah.
That's just what was
shown.
Yeah. That's just what was shown.
Yeah. So this is rampant in your industry and I think the effect is doctor, I would say, although I don't have any evidence, and maybe you can enlighten us on your own experience, that, you know, when I talked about direct consumer marketing from these drug companies and Tamiflu being one of those primary case studies that we would use, based on the evidence that we have here, do you think there's a liability for doctors now not to prescribe something that a patient wants because that patient will go elsewhere, right? I hear a lot of people say, I've even heard people say about you, if I can be honest,
yeah,
is Chad's not going to get you a Z-Pack when you're sick. We had an earlier show where I begged for a Z-Pack and he said no. It's because you believe in the facts, right? That's no problem. But I think there's a lot of people that would choose another doctor based on that.
And that's true. There's no question. I remember I was working in the emergency room, so this is my HIPAA compliant story.
Oh, we got a HIPAA compliant button.
HIPAA, Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act.
Nice. So I was working in the emergency room one night, and I was pretty cynical at the time, and you know, you're in the emergency room and people will come in with a paper cut that they've had for a week and they'll say, why am I not being seen right now? I'm like, well, because the guy next to you has no pulse.
That's going to be another show is what you've seen in the ER. maybe two shows. That'd be great.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. Entertaining.
Fascinating place to work. I love the emergency. I really do. I love the emergency.
We should actually talk about the dynamics of an emergency room and how it works. I'm dead serious because, no pun intended, dead serious. Because I think the emergency room is one of those places that when I go to the emergency room, my finger has been cut off and they tell me to wait in the waiting room. I need to better understand how that all works.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do it
I'm
really
bleeding
soon.
Bleeding and my finger's off and I feel like it needs to be put back on now.
Yeah.
But the doctor's like, no, we've got someone else. And I just want to understand that dynamic.
Yeah,
better.
I get it. But we'll do that
we'll
soon.
We'll get that. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So where were we?
I don't know. When you worked in the ER, you saw.
Okay,
yeah.
So this is my HIPAA compliant story. So this lady, so she comes in at the very beginning of the shift, and she came in and she had a cough. She had no fever.
Right.
She had no other problems. She had a cough. Now she felt bad because of the cough, but she was in her 60s. You know, clearly affluent. I think she had some social expectations.
Right.
Like she's kind of highfalutin kind of thing.
Right.
And she came in and she said, yeah. I've had this cough.
Right.
And I did my medical exam. There was absolutely no negative physical findings. Everything was completely normal on her. Her vital signs were completely normal. Everything was normal, but she had this cough. And I said, and you know, so she was afraid that she had bronchitis. Now, maybe she did, maybe she didn't. You know, I think we even did blood counts and those kinds of things, which again, were all normal. So this qualifies as a, you know, an upper respiratory type infection. And there's no good scientific evidence to support the use of antibiotics in these kinds of cases. And then you have the potential for all kinds of other things. And so I said, well, you know, everything looks normal to me. We can get you some medicine for your cough. You know, we'll try and make you more comfortable. And she was like, well, I need an antibiotic. And I said, well, there's no scientific evidence to support the use of antibiotics in this.
How many times have you had that conversation?
Oh, my goodness. Until I'm blue in the face.
Right.
And there is a major push, by the way, to limit the use of antibiotics, governmental, you know, agencies like CDC and those kinds of things, because we overprescribe antibiotics and it's leading to the emergence of multi-drug resistant bacteria. This is a potential major problem. We should probably talk about that in a future podcast.
Yeah,
too.
I'd love to. It's all over the news. I think it's a great topic.
So we need to minimize and save these antibiotics for when it really matters. And your cough, with all due respect,
probably
does not matter.
Yeah.
You're going to get over this in a few days, regardless of what we do. If it progresses and gets serious, now that's a different story. But now we're dealing with a different scenario. But so I you know, politely told her there's no evidence to support the use of antibiotics. And she said, well, my doctor would give me an antibiotic.
Yep.
And I just had to laugh. I just had to chuckle. And I was like, well, ma'am, I'm sorry, but you're in the emergency room. Your condition is not a true emergency.
Right.
We will do the best we can to treat you. But if you don't like your care, and you want the care that your doctor would give you, then perhaps you should have seen your doctor.
It's so nice. Wait, very passive aggressive. Very passive aggressive. But I like it. I like it.
But so I did the best I could.
Did she buy the hospital and fire you?
Well, so I ended up, she threw such a stink, I was like, fine, I'll give you erythromycin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, erythromycin is the category of drug that I would have chosen for that kind of case. I ended up giving her erythromycin. The side effect that can come with that is some gastrointestinal upset. So the nurse came back and said she can't take erythromycin because it upsets her stomach. And I was like, okay, so you're
sounds
asking
like
for
a peach of a lady.
Yeah. And I was like, so you're asking for a very specific antibiotic. You want what, you know, what you want. And I don't think I've ever said this to a patient, but I really wanted to say, if you know what you want, or if you want to be able to prescribe yourself this, then maybe you should go to medical school.
I hear you can do it online. It's fairly easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just with enough Cheerio box tops.
Right.
You're good.
Yeah. It baffles me. People who talk about it's actually a epidemic. I would call it an epidemic as an MBA, right? not an MD, but my observation what expert means in the health industry these days blows me away. So you have all these nutritional companies and network marketing companies that you would be more than qualified to speak to, right? Given that you have a very good comprehensive understanding of the body and how things affect people. But if you step back and you look at it, it all comes back to where we've started with the Tamiflu, and that is people aren't making buying decisions based on facts. In fact, they're making buying decisions from supplement companies and people that they know that don't even have a nutrition degree, you know, or any kind of background in nutritional supplements or medicine at all. And so I think capitalists, guys like me, guys that are looking for a profit, right, have taken advantage of that. So you have hospitals that cater to lifestyle. What the heck do we know about medicine? But And we're going to make you feel really good when you come here, right? I think we can name a few.
And I'm all for that.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. But it can't be absent of science. I mean, you can but there's a universe in which both it can exist, right?
That's right.
And I think that's what you're passionate about.
Exactly.
Right. Getting down to the science, you know, in a manner that makes the patient feel cared for and loved, right?
You got it.
Yeah. So you have both. You're doing pretty good, buddy.
I try.
Yeah. Look at you. You know, Chad and I knew each other in college. I will say that this guy is extremely smart, always has been, has had a passion for medicine since I knew him. My gosh, Chad, it's been a long time since we've been in college.
It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. We've been through a lot. We've been through it. So that's the end of our show today. We appreciate everyone listening. Stay tuned for the next podcast.
The flu shot. It's going to be a good one.
Flu shot is going to be a great one.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards. Tune in next week where we'll be going against the grain.